Rishus, the Rosh Hashiva, Rishus, all the Rabbeim, Talmidim. I want to, first of all, dedicate my remarks to the Nishmas, the Mali's brother, today's his yahrzeit, Yair ben Chaim V'Yafa. This time of the year in Yeshiva is a very special time of year, certainly as a Rebbe. A time when the Yeshiva Baruch Hashem is filled with alumni, with Talmidim that have come back to recharge, to reconnect to the Yeshiva, spend some time in Eretz Yisrael again, be close, talk to the Rebbeim, spend more time in the Beis Medrash. And it's a very, very special time. Very special time. I'm sure if you ask any of the Rebbeim, it's a tremendous chizuk for us as Rebbeim to see the Talmidim, how they're progressing, what they're accomplishing. It's a time of tremendous chizuk. At the same time, it's also maybe a little bit of a challenging time. I'm not really up to date with sports. I know that some teams, their season's finished, but things maybe are getting a little bit more intense for other teams, the playoffs. You know, there may be other distractions. There's a lot of visitors coming in, going out to eat. It's between semesters. A lot of people are going back. Back to Chutz Laaretz, moving on. It's a time of transition. The Baal HaTanya used to say that a Jew should live with the Parshas HaShavua. A Yid Daf Levin mit the Vach Sedra. Okay, that means in English, you live with the Parshas HaShavua. Meaning that everything is precise. There's nothing as coincidental. This week's parasha has a message that is particular for us at this time. So with that in mind, I'd like to discuss a few points from this week's parasha, which I feel personally can guide us. Number one, in this time, which is a time where it's maybe a little bit difficult to concentrate. It may be a little difficult to get into it. The winter, Baruch Hashem, setting in. We already feel maybe a little bit tired. We've been in yeshiva for a couple of months. And we still have some time to go. People are coming. People are leaving. It's maybe hard to concentrate. Maybe we can find in this week's parasha a few messages that will be relevant to us, to help us focus, to help us accomplish what we need to accomplish. This week's parasha, the pasuk says, "Vayikach Moshe es atzmos Yosef imoy." Pasuk took. Sorry, someone have a watch? I want to make sure I don't end really over time. Thank you, David. Pasuk says that Moshe Rabbeinu, he took with him the atzmos Yosef. He took the bones of Yosef, and when the sea saw Yosef's coffin, the sea split, right? So the Medrash says on this, a very famous comment. The Medrash cites a pasuk in Mishlei, Chacham Lev Yikach Mitzvos. The pasuk says, a wise heart takes mitzvos. The rest of the pasuk reads, let's find it. Ve'evil svasayim yilobet. A wise heart, a man that has a wise heart, grabs mitzvos. Ve'evil, but a fool, svasayim yilobet. He talks about it, and then he waffles. He waffles. He doesn't actually carry through. He's mitlabet. He's indecisive. So the Medrash says on this pasuk the following famous comment. Says the Medrash, Moshe Rabbeinu, he was this Chacham Lev, he was this wise man who had a wise heart, who knew to grab mitzvot. Why? Shekol Yisrael, Hayu Asukim B'Kesef Zov. What were the Jewish people doing now, their last days in Mitzrayim? They were busy with gold, with silver. What were they doing? They were asking their non-Jewish Egyptian neighbors, can I please borrow your nice silver candelabra? I just need to borrow it for a little bit of time. Can I borrow your gold Rolex? Can I borrow your the Porsche? I don't know. They were borrowing things from the Egyptians. And what was on Moshe Rabbeinu's mind? Moshe Rabbeinu was not involved with that. Moshe Rabbeinu was busy searching, as the Medrash elaborates at great length, he was searching for Yosef's remains, which were buried deep somewhere in the Nile. A whole elaborate discussion how he finds it in the Gemara and in the Medrash. So the Pasuk, the Gemara said, the Medrash and the Gemara relate this Pasuk to Moshe Rabbeinu. Chacham Lev Yikach Mitzvos. Moshe Rabbeinu, he's the wise man who's doing mitzvos. He's looking to find Yosef's coffin while everyone else is just busy taking care of themselves with money and gold. That's basically the Medrash. The famous question that's asked on this Medrash is, it doesn't make any sense. We know that Bnei Yisrael were instructed. Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, V'yishal huish mereyu v'isha mishchenta kesef v'kelim. They were told that they have to ask the Egyptians to give them gold and silver. This was a divine commandment to take the gold and silver from the Egyptians. And in fact, the Gemara in Brachos tells us that there was a great reason for this, because otherwise, if the Jews would have just left Egypt with their bodies without attaining wealth, then they could have argued that, God, you didn't fulfill your promise that you promised Avraham Avinu that we would be in exile. Then they'll become wealthy. And there would be maybe a tzviya. There would be a complaint, room to complain against Hashem. So the fact that they were involved in amassing all this wealth, taking it from the Egyptians, borrowing it for a couple of days, forever, they were in fact doing a mitzvah. Why they were allowed to borrow if they were taking it forever, separate discussion, we could talk about it later. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky has a nice pshat. But the question is, what's pshatting in the Medrash? The Medrash says, Moshe Rabbeinu, he's the wise man. He's taking mitzvahs while everyone else is just busy with gold. How you talking? They were also doing a mitzvah. What's pshat in the Medrash? The different answers that are given in the Mefarshim to answer this question. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, and a similar answer I saw in the Olein L'Shabeach from Yitzchak Zilberstein, he answers the following. Moshe Rabbeinu, right now, did not know what immediate benefit he would receive from this mitzvah. It's true. Taking gold and silver is a mitzvah, and finding Yosef's remains is also a mitzvah. Apparently, though, there are mitzvos and there are mitzvos. Chacham Lev Yikach Mitzvos means a wise man knows what mitzvos to go after, what mitzvos to take. Moshe Rabbeinu demonstrated tremendous insight and wisdom that he pursued the mitzvah of finding Yosef's remains, even though he had no idea what that would mean in terms of what kind of a payoff will that bring me. What kind of payoff is it going to get me if I'm going to now find Yosef's coffin? If I have to wait, I could do a mitzvah of becoming a millionaire. Could try to get a lot of gold and silver. And it's a mitzvah! What could be better than that? It's a mitzvah to amass a lot of gold and silver. Or I could search for Yosef's coffin when I don't see right away a tangible benefit. I don't see something that's tangibly concrete. Oh, this is what I'm going to accomplish by doing the mitzvah. That was the situation that Moshe Rabbeinu was presented with. He had on the one hand a mitzvah which he saw a tangible benefit, and on the other hand another mitzvah that it's a nice thing to do, but what am I going to get out of it? Chacham leiv yikach mitzvos is that Moshe Rabbeinu understood what you have to invest in. You invest in a mitzvah, even if you don't know exactly what the payoff will be, what the immediate tangible payoff will be. Even if it's not going to give you anas aguf, even if it will only give you anas anefesh, that's still the mitzvah that you should invest in. I saw a beautiful piece in this week's parasha from Rav Simon in a sefer Imrei Baruch. I hope no one did it yet. It's maybe early enough in the week that people haven't seen it, especially since it's the second piece on the Sedra. So maybe I'm still okay. He discusses the following. The pasuk says, "Oz Yoshir Moshe es Hashira Azois Bnei Yisrael." We have the Shira Sayam. So he brings down the question of the Arachayim. The Arachayim HaKadosh asks, "Why does the Torah have to tell us Oz Yoshir Moshe?" Then Moshe Rabbeinu with Bnei Yisrael sang this song. Why do we need that introduction of the word Oz? Then he sang a song. We should just say Vayashar Moshe uBnei Yisrael es Hashira Azos. Moshe Rabbeinu and Bnei Yisrael sang the Shira. Why does the Torah give us this introduction of the word Oz? Oz Yashir Moshe. Says the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, El Yechavein HaKosuv Lahodienu HaChonas HaMusak. The Pasuk is teaching us that Moshe Rabbeinu took time to prepare himself to understand, what am I about to do? To contemplate, to think about the events that just transpired, to internalize it, and then when he was ready and he appreciated, he understood the moment, then he sang a shira. Ki kishenichnisa belibam yiras haroimus v'emuna hashleima. When they had this tremendous yira of roimus, they saw the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they had belief. Oz zochu loim hashira beruach HaKadosh. Says Rav Simon Shlita, we see from here the following fundamental yisod, that in order for a person to accomplish something in ruchnius, in order for a person to achieve in spirituality, it requires preparation and understanding of what am I doing. You have to have an appreciation of what you're doing. If you don't properly appreciate what you're doing, you don't properly understand what it means to express Shira to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then you can't sing Shira. The Torah tells us first, Oz Yashir Moshe. Oz. First, he prepared. He thought about what happened. He thought about Kriyas Yamsuf, and only after they had internalized the experience of Kriyas Yamsuf, and they were able to evaluate properly what that experience meant, then they were able to sing Shira. But right away to sing a Shira, that's not possible. Because a person to engage in Ruchnius, he has to have the proper evaluation. He has to have the proper appreciation of what it is that I'm doing. What is this mitzvah that I'm doing? Says of Simon, an unbelievable diuk he brings in the name of one of my favorite svarim, Reb Yitzchak Sirotskin. The Gvuras Yitzchak is medayik, based on a medrash, but it's also based on what we say in the Siddur. In the Siddur we say, in the Yatzav Benachon, we say the following, Alzois shibchu ahuvim v'nosnu yedidim zmirois shirois v'shishbachos. Right? We say, about this event of Kriyas Yamsuf, those that were beloved, those that are friends, Yedidim, they sang songs to Hashem. And then later we say, Moshe ubnei Yisrael, l'cha anu shira b'simcha rabba v'om l'chula, micha mocha b'elam Hashem. So he says, if you look carefully at the text of the tefillah, it sounds like there were two different shiras. It starts off saying, Alzai shibcha ahuvim, v'nasni yedidim, z'mirais v'sishbachais, the ahuvim, the tzaddikim, those that are beloved, those that are friends of Hashem, they sang praises of Hashem, they sang shiras v'tishbachais, and only later we say, Moshe u'b'nei Yisrael, Moshe with b'nei Yisrael, l'cham shira v'simcha rabba v'chulam, micha mocha b'elam Hashem. So he quotes a medrash, that the medrash says that in fact, that's what happened. The shira of Oz Yashir took place in two stages. First, it says, Oz Yashir Moshe u'b'nei Yisrael. B'nei Yisrael, says the Yitzchak Saratsky, refers to the tzaddikim of B'nei Yisrael. It doesn't say Am Yisrael. Be Yisrael. It doesn't refer to the entirety of the Jewish people. And only later, in the middle of the Shira, did they all say, Micha Moicha Be'elam Hashem. Only later they all said, wow, who's great like a Kodesh Baruch? What's the explanation of this? Sort of Simon Shlita explains that the Pshat is, the tzaddikim, they were able to appreciate the experience of Kriyas Yamsuf immediately. They were able to understand the significance of Kriyas Yamsuf and what kind of a response that should evoke. They had that understanding. And when they had that understanding, they had that appreciation, they responded right away with Shira. But for the rest of the people, it took longer. So for the rest of the people, it only happened later. And with this, he explains also his pshat by, we have later in the Sedra, the episode of Meimara. So it says that they traveled for 3 days and they didn't have water to drink. And they came to this place, Mara, and the water was there. And they tasted from the water and the water was bitter. So they called it Mara. So he brings the following pshat. We know the Gemara says in Baba Kama that really, what does it mean they traveled for 3 days? They went for 3 days, they didn't have water to drink. And then it came tomorrow, they got water, and the water was bitter. So the Gemara says in Baba Kama, what does it mean they went for 3 days without water to drink? It means they went for 3 days without learning Torah. Torah is compared to water. And that's why the Gemara says in Baba Kama, Moshe Rabbeinu made a takana, you have to read Kriyas HaTorah Monday and Thursday. You shouldn't go 3 days without water. And we know that in Mara they got mitzvos. They got some mitzvos. They got Shabbos, I think Para. They were nitzdabu mitzvos in Mara. That means they came to Mara, but they didn't have water to drink. They felt fatigued because they had gone 3 days without learning Torah. They came down to Mara. They got a little bit of Torah. They got some water, but the water was bitter. The Torah was not. Wasn't kishmak for them. It was bitter. It was bitter. So what's the explanation? So Rav Simon brings the following from the Toldos Yankiv Yosef, one of the great Talmidim of the Baal Shem Tov. Toldos Yankiv Yosef says that we can understand this parasha in this vein as well. That it's not talking literally only about the water. That the water that they drank was actually bitter. But the learning that they received, those mitzvos, it was a little bit bitter for them. It wasn't so enjoyable. Why? He says, because since they went for 3 days without learning Torah, so now they lost a little bit of that appreciation of what it is to learn Torah. So when they were learning, it was bitter. It wasn't gishmak. They had a break in their learning, and I think we can attest to this ourselves, that the Gemara says, in Tazveini Yoyim Yoyimayim Azveka, the more you take breaks from learning, then when you do learn, you don't have a geschmack. You don't have a geschmack. And then you think, this is not for me. This is not for me. But if you would not take a break at every chance you had to look at your BlackBerry or to look at your iPod to check whatever else it is, if you wouldn't take breaks to take you out of learning, then you would have geschmack. Then you would enjoy it. But we take breaks. And since we take breaks, so the water is bitter. We don't enjoy our Torah. We don't enjoy our learning because we're not consistent enough. And therefore, we lose the appreciation of what it is. In order to actually engage in it, you have to have the right appreciation. I showed this morning Rabbi Yudin a very interesting halachic chiddush of the Adois Hashvi in Bava Mitzia, which I once heard years ago, which I think is a sensational, not only chiddush lahalacha, but it's a tremendous musar haskel. Without going into the details, the Adois Hashvi quotes the following situation, the following story. Says a guy once bought from a non-Jew a big slab of lead to roof his house. Paid for it, $10,000. Very nice. Then he decided, why should I put lead on my roof? I'm going to get myself some nice shingles. I'm going to get a fancier roof. So he had some more money. Why not? He bought himself a better material for his roof. But what's he going to do now with this big piece of lead that he wanted to cover his roof with? So he went and he sold it to his friend Reuven down the block. Fine. Paid him $10,000. Maybe paid him $11,000. He made even a little bit of money on the deal. Then his friend Reuven, he starts putting it on his roof. And a little piece chips. And he sees, lo and behold, under this lead is silver. This is really a piece of silver. It's a piece of silver. Wow, rich. Forget about the lead roof. He's going to get himself a whole new house. The silver. The first guy comes back to him. He says, you're a goslin. This is my stuff. I sold you lead. I didn't sell you silver. If I would have known it was silver, I never would have sold it to you. I would have kept it myself. So you're a thief. Give me back my silver. This question was posed to the Agos Hashvi. What's the halacha in this case? Says the Agos Hashvi, the guy can keep the silver. The second buyer keeps the silver. He keeps it. Why? Because the first guy never owned it. He never owned it. When he bought that item, that object, from the non-Jew, he thought he was buying lead. He bought lead. He did not buy silver. You paid him the price for lead. You paid him the price. He was silver, but he didn't realize that it was silver. Since he didn't realize it was silver, says the Agos Hashvi, he's not paying it. Doesn't want it. And therefore, the second guy can keep it. So we see the following yesod from the Agos Hashvi. You only have a kinyan on something if you know what it is. You appreciate it. Then it's yours. If you don't know what it is, then you don't have a kinyan on it. It doesn't belong to you. Even if you paid for it, it doesn't belong to you. You will only have a kinyan on Torah if you appreciate what Limud HaTorah is. And Baruch Hashem, for us in yeshiva, this time of the year, to see Talmidim, different places, different stages in their life, taking out the time where instead of going skiing, vacationing in Florida, or doing kol minei shtuyot sheba olam, they come to Eretz Yisrael to be in yeshiva, to learn. And I'm not saying anything about us at a ski. I don't know, I'm not a paisik. Probably it's a shot to kuach nefesh. I can't ski anyway, so for me it's not a problem. But probably skiing is good. It's a good form of exercise. But the point is, a person who takes his time to come back to yeshiva this time of the year, that demonstrates he knows what Torah is. He knows what it is to be a Ben Torah. He knows what it is. He has a kinyan on it. And if you talk a little bit to some of the alumni, as I've been speaking to them a little bit, everyone has their challenges. Yeshiva, the experience of being in yeshiva, some people think this is a chisaron, but they're mistaken. It's a little bit of a bubble. It's an insulated environment, separated from the world. And you're not faced with the same challenges that you're going to be faced with the minute you step out of yeshiva. There are many, many challenges. And Baruch Hashem, I was also this week to speak to some guys telling you they're my rabbi. They're my rabbi. I don't know if I would be in their situation with their challenges, I would be able to rise to the occasion. Baruch Hashem, they're able to rise to the occasion. But when we are in yeshiva, I'm talking now to those that are in yeshiva, Shana Aleph, Shana Bet, we have to build ourselves now. We have to make that kinyan on being a Ben Torah. Because the minute we step out, we're going to be challenged so many different ways. We have to make the kinyan on it now. We have to be like Moshe Rabbeinu, the Chacham Lev Yikach Mitzvos, to grab those opportunities, to appreciate it, to seize the opportunity that we have. There's a famous marshal of the Chofetz Chaim, once mentioned in my shir, and it's Rabbi Franz Sefer, this week's parsha. It's beautiful, on this pasuk. Famous marshal of the Chofetz Chaim says it was a guy who was very, very poor. And he needed money to support his family. They were mamish on the verge of starvation. And he heard that in a certain island, the streets are littered with diamonds, jewels, emeralds, rubies, sapphires. It's mamish full for the taking. You just got to come there, you grab it, you become overnight a multi-millionaire. He said, great. So he got himself onto a boat that was heading out to this island. He's going to be working in the kitchen. Gets to the island. Gewaldig! Starts stuffing his pockets, diamonds, jewels. He's going to come home. His wife and children are going to be so excited. Okay, but the next boat out of there is 8 months from now. So he's got to eat. So he walks into a grocery store, he pulls out a big diamond, and he gives it to the meicher. He thinks, wow, I'm going to stomach get like the whole store with this. He says, can I please have a loaf of bread? The guy says, what? This? You think you're going to buy a loaf of bread? This is worthless over here. You want to give me something that's worth value. Here, what's worth a lot of money is what they call in Yiddish, schmaltz. That means fat. Animal fat. Dripping fat, smelly stuff. Some people like it with herring. Talk to Rabbi Wittenstein. I don't know. Can't relate to that. But the guy's like, schmaltz, where am I going to get schmaltz from? I have all these diamonds. How am I going to get all the schmaltz? What do you want me to get? So he says, I don't know. It's your problem. I'm not going to sell you, you know, a loaf of bread for a diamond. I could get the diamond myself. I could pick it up from the floor of the street. It's not worth anything. So finally, the guy sets himself up, he gets himself a job, he starts amassing this fortune of schmaltz, and he's there already for like a year. He already forgot, you know, that outside in the world that he came from, schmaltz is not really worth anything, but what is really worth a lot of money are diamonds. He's now in the mindset of the island. He's thinking like the people on the island. If you want to advance, you got to get a lot of schmaltz. So he sells all the diamonds that he has, basically, and he gets himself 10 tons of schmaltz. He builds up a big business, huge business. He's got the schmaltz. He packs it into cartons. It's time to leave the island. He sends it on the boat back to the United States. He thinks, wow, it's amazing. I'm going to come. They're going to give me now a front seat in the five-town shul. I'm going to move right up front with the rest of the gvirim who work on Wall Street. And it's going to be geschmack. He comes home, and they unpack the cartons, and there's this stench. His wife's like, what did you bring here? He says, what are you talking about? I brought schmaltz, gewaldig. I brought, this is like, came rich. Still, this is not worth anything here. This just smells. It's got a terrible odor. You didn't bring any diamonds, any jewels. It's like, oh, God. She starts going through his pockets. She sees, oh, little bits. There's some diamonds left in his pockets. She sells the diamonds, they become rich. But the guy is broken the rest of his life. What an idiot! What an idiot I was. I was so stupid. I had the chance to get diamonds, and instead I filled it with schmaltz. What do we fill it with? Sports. Okay, I'm not saying bad things about sports, but we fill it with watching things on different devices, all kinds of other things. I know, for me personally, I'm just speaking about person, I'm not speaking about anyone particular, but personally, for me, as a Rebbe, I'm teaching in yeshiva here, Baruch Hashem, 10 years. It just pushed, it hurts me. Someone's teaching Torah, and people should be at the same time, or a few minutes before, in the football game, watching the highlights. Unfortunately, it means that we are like the Bnei Yisrael who traveled for 3 days without water. And when we tasted the water, it was bitter. We didn't have the enjoyment. But why didn't we enjoy it? Because we weren't consistent enough. Or we didn't have the right appreciation of what it is. We didn't have the right appreciation of what we're doing. And not everything has to have a tangible, immediate, physical pleasure from it. We were like the Bnei Yisrael and Mitzrayim, grabbing the gold and the silver that gives us an immediate pleasure. But what about Moshe Rabbeinu? Chacham lev yikach mitzvos. We have to be like Moshe Rabbeinu. I want to close with one last word, even though I know I'm a bit over time. Apologize. But since I'm getting this opportunity, I think, only once for the whole year, so I'm going to go with it. I know. I'm not sure if they'll ask me back after my comments about iPods or Blackberries. I don't know. It's on tape. Maybe we can erase it. But I saw an unbelievable pshat in the Sefer Lev Shalom from Reb Shalom Shradron in this week's parasha, the beginning of the parasha. The pasuk says, Pari sent out the nation. Hashem didn't lead them to go with the Plishtim. Why? To pass by the Plishtim, even though that's a shorter route to Eretz Yisrael. Because it was close to Egypt. And God says, I'm afraid if there's going to be a war with the Plishtim, they're going to want to turn around and go back to Egypt. Says of Shalom Shradron. I understand. They were in Egypt now the last 210 years under very harsh physical labor, slaves. Their whole personality, their whole chashivas, their self-esteem was stripped away from them. You mean they're going to go back to the concentration camps? They're going to have a little skirmish with the Plishtim. They're going to say, forget it. We want to go back. We want to, like they say, we remember the Avatiach. We remember those watermelons. We want to go back to Mitzrayim. This makes no sense. What's going on over here? What's pshat? Says in Shalom Shradron, the Torah is teaching us the following insight. Ki karoivu. What does it mean, ki karoivu? So he brings the following famous story, which he says he heard personally, firsthand, from his brother-in-law, Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. That Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, his family, we don't have so much time, so we'll try to abbreviate a little bit the story. But basically, Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, his family, they lived in the old city, and in the, let's say, 1920s, late 20s, their apartment was a little bit cramped, so they moved out of the old city to another neighborhood in Yerushalayim called Nachlat Sadok. And in this neighborhood, Nachlat Sadok, at that time, people were very poor. Sometimes you had to share an apartment with somebody else. You lived in the same apartment with another family. And I know this personally from my great uncle. He told me he shared an apartment. I was in his apartment in Geula. He shared an apartment. It was a tiny apartment. He shared it with Rabbi Avraham Shapiro and his wife. There were two families living mamish in the same apartment. It wasn't the wall separating them. They lived in the same apartment for a couple of years. People couldn't afford it. So Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach's parents moved into an apartment in this neighborhood, Nachlat Sadok. And there was a couple living in that apartment that were not religious. A chiloni couple. So they told them, look, we want to share this apartment. We'll split with you the rent. But please, out of sensibility to us, don't be Mechal Shabbos in front of us. Don't be Mechal Shabbos. They said, okay, fine, it won't be B'chal Shabbos. But next Shabbos, the guy turned on the lights. The wife starts cooking. So they're very upset. We made a deal that you're not going to be Mechal Shabbos. So Rav Shlomo Zalman went with the husband for a walk. Rav Shlomo Zalman was a bacher. And the husband tells Rav Shlomo Zalman, look, I believe in God. I believe in Hashem. I just don't know what Shabbos is. Now that you told me what I'm not supposed to do, I'm not going to do it. He says Rav Shlomo Zalman, I don't understand. You believe in God, but you don't practice? What's pshat? The guy says the following. He says, I was a soldier in the Russian army in World War I. And I grew up in an irreligious family. My parents were reformed. My grandmother used to light Shabbos candles. He says, I was on the front line in the army in World War I, the Russian army. And there were other Jews there that were religious. And when we were there in the foxholes and were shooting, I would see from time to time that these other Jews who were religious, they would take out some little book and they would say some words, and then you'd see that they had like a certain sense of security, of calmness about them. And I was very curious, what are they doing? What's pshat? And I asked them, because I felt that this whole thing is like crazy. What am I doing here on the front lines just because Stalin is, you know, upset at Germany? What does that have to do with me? Why do I have to be over here? He doesn't care about me. Like, it's so, like, so random. Why am I here? Just shooting, just barely trying to stay alive. And then I spoke to this fellow and he told me, there's a God. Everything is from Hashem. Everything that happens is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You're here because Hashem wants you here. And they had a certain sense of confidence and tranquility about them. And I wasn't sure how to relate to it. This irreligious fellow tells him, Shlomo Zalman. Says, I decided I'm going to make Hashem a deal. I'm going to make Hashem a deal. I'm going to say, God, if you show yourself to me that you exist, then I will believe in you and I'll become religious. If you will get me out of this Gehenna alive by injuring my finger, okay, a bullet should hit just my finger, so it won't, you know, affect me for my whole life, and I'll be discharged because I won't be able to shoot a gun. They'll discharge me from the front lines. Then I believe in you, I said. 2 minutes later, a bullet comes, hits his finger. He gets discharged from the army. He says, here! He shows his finger to Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach. Rav Shalom Shadron, Rav Shlomo Zalman's brother-in-law, he heard the maisa from Rav Shlomo Zalman. Guy showed him the finger. Look! Here's my finger. He said, Rav Shlomo Zalman, so what happened? Guy said, look, I thought to myself, yeah, I'm going to become religious. I'm going to start learning about Judaism. But I was already almost finished with my studies to become an agronomist. I was studying somewhere in Russia, agriculture. And I figured, why should I start now in a yeshiva? Let me finish up my studies first, and then I'll go to a yeshiva. And basically, the inspiration that I had wore off, and then I just never took it up again. Says Rav Shalom Shvadron, the pasuk is telling us HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't take Klal Yisrael by the way the Plishtim. Why? Ki Karevu, because it was close. Meaning, Mitzrayim was close. Even though Mitzrayim was Gehenim, but it was familiar and it was comfortable. There was a certain degree of comfortability that they had in Mitzrayim. They got used to the situation. It was Gehenim, but they got used to it. And it was close, it was comfortable, it was familiar, they could go back, even though it was terrible. The only way to break out and to actually change is to not make the mistake that this fellow in the story of Rav Shlomo Zalman made, which is when you have that inspiration, when you have that moment of clarity to actually act upon it, and then in Yetz Hashem, will be like Moshe Rabbeinu, will be that individual, the Chacham Lev, Yikach Mitzvos, and will be able to actualize and fulfill our real potential.
That's good.
Guys, that's really, yeah.